ooze from between my teeth. I would die for the truth that all men are created equal. But in the kingdom of death, amidst ramparts of bodies and wind all of screams, there is a king, and his name is not Loon. It is Reaper. For the Republic, I scream as I enter the fray.
Chapter 85. Lysander, Loon Invictus. I have never fought low colours hand to hand. I annihilate them. Faces and arms and skulls, scalped by the teeth of sunbloods, swirl around me like so much grotesque confetti. Weapons spark off my greaves. Men fall over themselves to avoid the teeth of my steed, only to be trampled by his hooves. It is all a frenzied blur, which I approach with systematic detachment. I would fear losing track of the battle in the strict focus of the mind's eye, so I float along the edges of its shores, breathe, stab, turn, breathe, stab, turn. Roan and the Praetorians swirl around Kalindora and me. Our force is irresistible. Kalindora, an animating spirit atop her mount, the ranks of the enemy are shattered, but their will is not. It was Kalindora who introduced me to the term blood red for the battle frenzy of the red clansmen. I believe I see it now. They refuse to yield the boulevard. They heave their bodies against it, forming bulwarks of the dead and living. They slash at our horses' bellies or fire down from rooftops. But when our attention bears down on them for a single moment, they become mincemeat. My rooftop elements will be pressing forward. My infantry advances at a run through the plaza to support our charge. Soon the enemy will be routed, and we will sweep south to run down their support legions and force those at the spaceport and mound to surrender. As I try to free my horse from a tangle of bodies, I spot a red sniper taking aim from a window above. Roan fires over my shoulder, nailing three rounds into the sniper's center mass. More snipers provide cover for us from the rubble of the water gardens. "Where is he?" I shout to Roan. My Praetorians cluster around me, hacking and shooting anyone who comes near. He knew I'd expect him on Triumphia. Without Darrow in captivity, my victory will be incomplete. Roan's flinty eyes search the milling mob. From the horses we can see nothing but the churn of battle. Then I spot the signs of his advance from the far side of the Triumphia. It is like the coming of a tiger through tall grass. First a rippling in the distance that seems like the wind, then a tunneling force, an outward swaying of riders, the starting of horses. Men disappear from saddles, sunbloods collapse sideways with horrible wounds, and then, like the tiger's tail, the curved sling blade rises above the stalks as he threshes all in his path. He kills with impossible aggression. I will not repeat past mistakes and rush to meet him. "Roan, bring him down!" I shout. The Praetorians follow my blade and shoulder their rifles as they stand in the stirrups. Trace around, scream into the mob as Darrow disappears behind a horse. Then a raw-throated cry roars up from Darrow's men. "Red rain! Red rain!" I look up, just as the stars are obscured by shadows. Reds rain from the sky. They fling themselves off the rooftops that line the Via Triumphia and fall three stories to land amongst us. Our fire team becomes chaos. I slash upward at a shadow, dividing it in two. Not an arm's length away, a Praetorian gurgles and jerks his arm as a red man lands on the saddle behind him and soars through his throat. He throws the knife at me. I backhand it away and stab my razor through the Praetorian into the red. A man crashes into me, holding onto my side by the lip of my breastplate. His knife flashes at my face. I duck my head. The knife stabs several times into the crown of my skull but fails to break the bone. I bring my razor into his gut and open his right side. He spills off just as gore squirts into my face, as a woman comes down with a block of masonry atop the head of a Praetorian. Kalindora cuts her clean in half, and then looks over my head with eyes wide. Tele! An immense force lands on me. Whatever it is heavy enough to make blood of empire reel sideways. I'm flung from my saddle. As I stand, a blur comes at my head from the side. I twist away, and a tremendous impact lifts me clean off my knees and throws me through a window into an apartment atrium. I slide across the floor until the marble stairway jars me to a halt. The wind is knocked from me. I gasp for air, and when I sit up, I am shocked to find that my spine is not broken. A dent, the circumference of a grapefruit, has been made in the side of my breastplate. By the time I stumble to my feet, the doorknob is turning. A hulking shadow steps into the atrium, carrying a huge warhammer. I don't even have to look at her face. Telemannus! I bring my razor up with both hands over my head in Arja's favorite form for obsidians, bow splitter. It is an easy transition into the branch which cannot snap, the maneuver that killed Ragnar Valaris. You killed a pup, she growls. Let's see you handle me. She rushes forward, bellowing her family's name. Without the weight of armor, I'd be faster than that hammer, and might be induced to accept her invitation. But she is stronger, more experienced, and better designed for close-quarters brutality. I could pick her apart, but one loose stone, one slip of the foot, and she'd maul me to death. I make it a running engagement and bolt up the stairs. Little bitch! She screams as she pursues. At the top of the stairwell, I kick through an apartment door and wait for her thundering steps to come up the stairs. When she reaches the landing, I plunge the razor through the wall. It meets the resistance of armor and pushes through. She roars in surprise. The razor comes back bloody. Her warhammer chases it through the wall, but I'm already in flight. I run through the apartment, past a shrieking silver, as Thraxa trundles after me. I push a bookshelf down to block her. She shatters through it as I dive through a window back down to the melee on the street. I land on my feet. Telemannus! The window frame shatters as her broad shoulders knock it free of the plaster, and from the debris jumps a demigod and her hammer. Roan leans backward from his saddle and fires a burst at Thraxa as she passes overhead. Three bullets impact in a triangle shape under her armpit, punching through the armor into her ribcage. She lands, just as I dive between the legs of a horse. Her huge hammer crumples the rider and breaks the horse almost clean in half. She teeters over the screaming animal like a weary blacksmith. I thrust my razor over the dying horse at Thraxa's heart. She catches the blade flat between her huge gauntlets and manages to divert it into her belly. She reels me in by pulling the blade deeper. Her mouth opens in a mad laugh, and she lunges to bite off my nose. Then a horse hits us, and we go sprawling over corpses. I manage to keep a hold of my razor. By the time I find Thraxa limping to her feet, two reds drop from a fourth-story ledge to drag her toward a horse. Roan jumps from his own to stand over me with Praetorians. They're in a panic, hauling at me, screaming to get behind them as they shoot. Then I see why. Darrow bulldozes toward me, his army in tatters around him. He breaks through behind a wedge of three armored obsidians. Roan's men shoot the obsidians, but they stumble into the line, and Darrow explodes out from behind them. His razor passes through a man's teeth and jaw. He looks left, then disappears in a blur. He threw his body back just as Kalindora galloped past on her horse. Still, he's clipped hard enough to spin like a top, but as he falls, his red acrobats shine. No one falls like the Reaper. His whip snakes out and snaps hold of the back fetlock of Kalindora's horse. He's ripped down the boulevard before the greys can shoot him. The horse tramples through a wall of men and clears the other side. Then it goes down. Kalindora disappears. Through the mill of bodies I see her gain her feet as Darrow charges her. Their blades spark in an incredible display of fatigued swordsmanship. And then she falls. He hacks down at her four times before turning back to me. A roar comes from behind me, back where the Triumphia meets the plaza. The infantry pour in, and the spirit that anchored the rising soldiers to this plot of land finally shatters. In a weird, instantaneous snap, their dogged last stand morphs into mindless hysteria. They flee through the back alleys and down the Triumphia, flowing past Darrow, who stands there watching me. Many drop their weapons or discard their armor to run faster. As happens in all retreats, men are shot through the back, cleaved down from behind, losing far more with their backs turned than when they stood their ground. It is a rout. A trio of horses speeds through the broken army. Thraxa slumps in one saddle. One of the Reds who dragged at the safety holds the reins of the third horse as the other sits backward and fires with his rifle. Two shots whiz past my head, close enough to flay open the skin of my scalp. Darrow mounts one of the horses as they pass. He looks back at me as my infantry pours through the plaza down the boulevard and kicks his horse away. I rush to Kalindora as my men push forward. A gold says something braggadocious to me, and I shove past him, to find her crawling toward a lamppost, so as not to be trampled underfoot. She leaks blood from a long gash down her left side. Her remaining arm is hacked to several pieces. She tries to say something to me. I call for medici. Several Praetorians rush my way to help staunch the bleeding. I look down the dark boulevard after Darrow.
"Let him run,"
Kalindora says.
"You're no equal."
I grip a Praetorian. They all have field medical training.
"Keep her alive."
I grab Kalindora's loyalist razor from the ground and sprint back to Blood of Empire and jump into his saddle to pursue. Roan shouts after me, but I know if I let Darrow slip through my fingers, he will disappear into the city like smoke. The Praetorians try to keep up, but Blood outpaces their tired steeds. Buildings whip past, retreating men scatter, mobs with torches cheer. Then I catch sight of the trio, galloping south on a quiet stretch of the Via Triumphia, just past the bank of Heliopolis.
"Reaper!"
He does not turn.
"Slave!"
Somehow, through the clatter of hooves, he hears me and wheels his horse around. Thraxa reaches for him and misses. Her horse carries her past. Covered in gore, his sling blade held at his right side, he looks a devil atop the blood-frothed steed. Darrow brings his sling blade around to point at me. Drawn by my shout, shadowed faces fill the windows that line the street. With a groaning howl, Darrow accepts my challenge. He kicks his horse's flanks. It springs forward. Blood of Empire needs no encouraging. He sees a horse that is less than him and surges to meet the challenger. For a moment there is nothing in the world but my enemy and me and the bobbing of the starlit street and the cacophony of horse hooves on stone. It forms a tunnel of concentrated destiny. I bring my borrowed razor up like a lance in my left hand. In the mill of battle, I am not his equal, nor am I in the dueling ring, but aristocrats have always held a monopoly on horsemanship. Darrow jerks on his reins, angling to his left as if to pass on my right. Predictable. I anticipate he will swerve to my left at the last moment and toss his sling blade to the other hand to turn my lance and decapitate me with a passing backhand, or he'll crash our horses together to maim us both. But he does not see that I brought Kalindora's razor as well as Alexander's. I clutch Kalindora's out of sight, behind Blood's neck instead of the reins. I steer with my knees, as Atalantia taught me to as a boy, as I saw my father ride, when I was not even as tall as his knees. At 10 meters, just as Darrow swerves to my left, I swerve right and take my shot. I flick Kalindora's razor in an underhand toss. It carries forward and disappears into Darrow's chest. Just as the horses draw even, I swing Alexander's razor with my left arm, digging my toes into the stirrups and driving with my legs to meet his sling blade as we pass. Metal cracks. The world upturns. My arm goes numb. The razor shatters and flies out of my grip. My head slams against the ground as I skid across the street. I stumble up and fall, concussed. The world tips back and forth as I pick up the hilt of my shattered razor and look for Darrow. Somehow, impossibly, he was not unseated. He slumps from his horse, Kalindora's razor protruding through his chest and out his back. Praetorians are galloping toward him down the street. His left arm flops unnaturally at his side as he pulls the horse around and kicks it down an alley to disappear into the city. Roan and the Praetorians rein the horses in as they reach me. A dozen set off after Darrow. "My liege, are you wounded?" Roan cries. I stare after Darrow.
"He got him through the chest," a Praetorian says. "Razor straight through the heart. He's dead. He has to be."
"It was his lung," I say. "My liege, are you prime?" I only just realize my teeth are chattering. Needles of pain shoot up my left arm. Beneath the armor, the bones must be shattered from the force of the collision. But lying between the hooves of the Praetorians' horses is a blood-smeared object. I pick it up with my good hand and hold it close to see it better as the street fills with my advancing army. It is the hilt of Darrow's sling blade, and its killing edge lies in shattered pieces upon the stone.
Chapter 86. Darrow. Legion's End. I'm in a nightmare. Lysander's riders hound me through the labyrinth of dark streets. Searing pain digs deep into my chest. I did not see the hidden blade until it was inside me. My teeth chatter together. Each breath froths with blood. I have no weapon. Only my right arm works. My left is shattered along with the sling blade. The gift my wife gave me almost 12 years ago lies upon the ground to be a trophy for Lysander's mantle. One day, he will tell his son how he took it, as I told Pax of how I took Octavius. The city itself becomes a devil, and the prisoners surge south. Lysander's sunbloods have broken the other strong points. They trample men in the wide boulevards as his golds flow across the roofs. Few escape the nocturnal predators. His infantry is comprised of all those prisoners we took in the Battle of the Ledon. Over 1 million join with Heliopolitan mobs to butcher survivors in sunless gardens, underneath the striped awnings of abandoned markets, and on the steps of old amphitheatres littered with refugee trash. The Heliopolitans seem to be killing Tychians as well. I escape back to the mound only by virtue of the chaos. My horse's hooves clump over cobbles deep with blood. Ragged survivors from the other strong points pour across the mall toward the steps of our last refuge. There are so few. There is no way to tell if the sacrifice was worth it, if the quarter hour we bought saved any lives at all. The city is lost. Lights glimmer in orbit from Atalantia's arriving ships. My men are fractured. Did Rona make it back to the Morning Star? It will be a tomb. Those at the ships will never reach the tunnels, and on foot, how far could they go? It's up to Colloway to lead them. But lead them to what? It's all ruins. and Atalante will be coming with real weapons very soon. Thraxa and Red Sniper wait for me at the bottom of the mound steps. Thraxa looks nearly dead herself. "Did you get him?" she asks. "No." The strength holding her up evaporates. She slumps in the saddle and barely manages to follow me up the mound steps. I dismount inside the atrium, where Harnassus is organizing the survivors. Legionnaires have rushed to help Thraxa down from her horse. It takes four of them. Harnassus rushes to me, slowing when he sees the razor sticking through my chest.
"Are you?"
"Screwface," I demand. "He hasn't returned." I say nothing. "They broke through his lines. Only four men have come back. They say they saw him fall to a gold." "They were going wild trying to get him," a man adds. "They were Fulminata." Fulminata. The legion in which he embedded himself at my command. I hang my head, dazed from my wounds and exhaustion. I don't know if I can move another muscle. My hamstrings and lower back are cramping so bad, I have to have men help me out of my armor. I almost pass out as they take the vambrace off my shattered arm. They leave the breastplate on, for fear of disturbing the razor in my chest. There's a commotion as they take off my dead boots. I stand barefoot in blood to see men stumbling in carrying Screwface. A shout goes up when the men see him pass. He's missing his right leg from the knee down and the skin above his hairline. He's been scalped by a Fulminata obsidian. As the medici tie off the wound, Screw stares at the murals on the ceiling of the antechamber and moans. His eyes are wild and distant.
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry," he murmurs. "We tried to hold. We did. They had horses. It was a bloody damn cavalry charge. Mowed us down like wheat. They'll catch the support. Some of them. Horses. Horses."
He's in shock, one of the medici says, and then sees the razor in my chest.
"Sir, no time. It's just a lung."
Screwface grabs my good arm.
"Clown, Pebble, are they safe?"
"Aye," I say. "They're safe. They're with Severo."
"If anyone could make it out, it's that ugly bastard,"
I whisper to the medicus.
"Will he live?"
"Hopefully not," Thraxa says. She's slumped on the statue's pedestal as Reds help her out of her armor. She's bleeding badly from the hole Lysander and his men put in her belly.
"It's over. Here. Back home. No shame in it. We gave it a rugged shot."
Her hammer is gone. Her reserve razor sits in her lap.
"But I won't be tortured by that creature. Atalantia will vivisect us. There's only one honorable end to this."
I walk over and take her razor.
"It's not over," I snap.
Several hundred weary faces look at me.
"It is not over,"
I shout to them.
"If you can fight, assemble at center."
The few able-bodied men assemble.
"Darrow."
Thraxa reaches out her hand for her blade.
"I'll die my way. You die yours.
For loyalty to the end, it is the least I can do." I give the razor back. Tired beyond words, I arrange the able bodies with what remains of our guns to constitute a defense for the mound. As if it will matter when Atalantia comes. A hand settles on my shoulder as I send snipers to the gallery. I wheel around to kill the man, but find Harnassus standing there, shrunken and tired, arms caked to the elbow in blood from the wounded.
"Darrow, enough,"
There's nothing more to do. I say nothing, because I know he is right. One of the red snipers I sent after Loon joins us, a nasty wound on the side of his head.
Might be able to get you out underground, sir.
Alone amongst my men, he seems to think there's still hope. I disabuse him of it. The tunnel entrances are collapsed. The ships are dead. There's nowhere to go. Hearing a noise, I look back to Harnassus. Did you hear that?
What?
A ship engine.
Where are you going? Darrow!
It takes me a full 2 minutes to climb the stairs to the mound's tower. I throw up halfway to the top. The sick is dark with blood. My limbs are cold and trembling. The razor in my chest hurts so bad it's all I can do to focus on breathing as I look out over the city. There is nothing to see in the darkness. No lights break the spell Lysander has summoned. Only the soft, ocean-like sounds of screams. No lights illuminate the sea, no ships over the water. It was my imagination. A phantom hope. Harnassus mutters a curse for his aching joints as he joins me, breathing heavily.
I'm sorry, he says after a moment. I say nothing.
Glerastis did something to the EMP. Built in a back door. We should have seen it. We should have stopped it. I told you we could. I thought we could keep up with him.
I look over at him at the very moment where the stalwart commander breaks. It is a single shudder, one that comes from the hidden, substantial depths of the man, and reveals for just a moment the insecure child within, as he realizes what he always suspected is true. He treads in waters far too deep. All this time, I shied from his disapproval. In the absence of Dancer, he became my father figure in a way. I didn't even know it until now, because there is nothing like seeing a father shudder. And then he buries the child and is Harnassus again, hero of the Vox, scowling leader of men. You know the curse of this world? I ask, looking at the body the carver made for me. The greatest gifts were given to the worst of us. Not realizing they are gifts is what makes them the worst, he replies, as the first of Lysander's legions begin to fill the mall below. My men die as they scramble up the steps, as if there were any safety inside with us.
You know I envied you.
I look over at him.
Why him? I asked. Why did Ares choose an arrogant pisspot miner and not me?
It was pettiness. Pettiness that made the Vox. Pettiness that brought us to this. But your wife believed in the Republic, didn't she? I nod.
You didn't. I saw you lose faith, one step at a time, looking to solve it all yourself. That's why I stood in your way. I thought this was what you wanted. A glorious end. Now that it's here.
He searches my eyes.
If not for the Republic, if not for a hero's end, why? Why keep going?
Sometimes a simple question wakes a sleeping answer. I had this picture in my head where I would wake beside Virginia. I'd let her sleep and rise to make coffee, breakfast. And when they woke, my wife and son would find me reading at the kitchen table, or maybe making something out back.
That's it, he says. That's it.
he bellows a laugh. As insult, the sky begins to glow. Individual friction flames from descending star shells coalesce into a throbbing furnace of light. Well, I imagine one of those friction trails is Atalantia, or Ajax. They'll want us alive. He nods. I won't risk being taken in a last charge. It will smell like clothes and melting rubber as the Celtex comes in. We'll pass out, then we'll wake up in hell. The reflected light from the friction trails carves across Harnassus' eyes. I'll be damned if I let this be the last thing I see. You shouldn't either. He pauses. I don't think any of my men will be taken prisoner. It would mean something to them if you were with them in the end. When I do not reply, he goes back down the stairs. Harnassus. He pauses and turns. Thank you. For what? Being my conscience. I smile at him. My wife says I sometimes need that. I know it isn't an easy role. But what a role! He laughs before he departs. What a role! I stand alone in the tower, watching the friction trails glow over the city, and wonder if this was not inevitable. If all our hope was nothing more than a feeble religion that could not stand the test of time. I sigh onto the railing and work my good hand through my hair. A tinkle comes from inside my armor. I pull my son's key from within and look down at it and feel an ache. How can something so small mean so much? Even now, when I know I will never see my boy again, I feel as if he were here with me, as if my wife were by my side in these last moments. The world was too cruel to them. I was too cruel in my own way. But there was beauty. For a moment, there was real beauty. I look down at the lost city and feel small comfort. I kept looking for hope in the world, expecting the world to supply deliverance if I plucked the right chords, demanding that it supply validation to my labor if I just gave enough effort. But that is not the nature of the world. Its nature is to consume. In time, it will consume us all. And the spheres will spin until they too are consumed when our sun dies. Maybe that is the point of it. Knowing that though one day darkness will cover all, at least your eyes were open to see moments of light. I pry open my thigh pack and pull out a canister. I pour Dagos's Lycos oil into my hands. I would have liked to see home once more before the end. There is a gust of air behind me. Oh, gods, brooding again. Something's never changed, a voice says. I turn to see a vision from the past. Cassius? Hello, Goodman. Kavak said you might need a hand.
Chapter 87. Lysander. Ghost. The streets run red with blood and echo with screams. Darrow's army is in full rout. Mechanized soldiers from Atalantia's orbital forces leave vapor contrails in the air. Along the Bay of Sirens there is a great slaughter as men flee the city on foot or swim out into the bay, only to be microwaved by dropships buzzing over the water. Torch ships descend on the dark spaceport, And in the courtyard, before the mound of Votum, thousands upon thousands of freed prisoners of war and mechanized legionnaires, fresh to the fray, congregate. I watch after Kalindora as she is lifted away by Ash Legion Medici. The wounds Darrow left her with are gruesome, but not beyond the ability of the trauma wards to mend. She will survive, but I feel a sense of guilt for how I left her there to chase Darrow. I could no more have stopped the bleeding than the Praetorians I left her with, but leave her I did, and there is little nobility in that. There is little nobility to any of this. There is a thump behind me. Roan's hand drifts to his rifle. I turn to see Ajax landing with a cadre of Ashguard. The irony of his leopard helmet slithering back into its collar, when his own iron leopards flow past, bloody and triumphant, my name on their lips, is lost to no one, least of all the insecure boy inside the dreaded man. He abandoned his men before the storm wall of Heliopolis, only to find me here, alive. Devilish, in 50 kilograms of advanced armor and weapons, he looks up as I sit tattered and filthy upon blood of empire, as the courtyard swarms with ragged legionnaires and high-tech soldiers. He takes in my melted face, the steed, the chanting of his own leopards. Whatever he planned to say is concealed within the tight formality. Salve, Lysander. But it is hate in his eyes, as if I did all this to mock and spite him and steal his place in Atalantia's bed. For a flicker of a moment he considers whether gunning me down before the army may be worth the cost in the long run, but the arrival of the Votum Peerless stays his hand. I salute his rank. Praetor Grimus, the enemy is split into 4 groups. The most numerous gather within the Morning Star, where Atlas Aura is being held. I recommend sending a party immediately before they execute him, if they have not already. The next most numerous have taken to the mountains, where they have constructed tunnels. Others hide within the city and sewers. But Darrow is in the mound. He is grievously wounded. By whose hand? Ajax asks. Mine. I pull Darrow's hilt from my saddle and toss it to him. He blinks, unable to comprehend. The officers around him mirror his disquiet. How? Ajax asks. I lean forward. Which part? Who are you, boy? A false praetor demands. He is the blood of Selenius, Cicero says from behind him. The Votum heir is alive and covered with grime from his exploits in the prison break. He stalks up surrounded by 12 soldiers in tattered prison regalia. His sister is at his side with a flock of glittering knights. As Atalantia's legions take their city, they see another play at hand. The heir returned from the Moor of Chaos, Cicero says. His knights stiffen to attention and salute me. Hail, Loon! The hate in Ajax's eyes darkens, and he shouts for his peerless to assemble. They form a glittering knot and make for the mound. They're trying to seize your glory, Loon, Cicero says. Shall we join them? I look at the dangerous knights around Ajax, likely friends of those I killed in the desert. In the chaos, it would be only too easy for one to slash my spine as they flew past. I think not. 400 peerless scarred of the Votum and Ash legions move on the mound. I sit with my Praetorians in the middle of the square as the doors evaporate. Roan sulks beside me, ignoring the sweet wine throngs of Heliopolitans bring the soldiers. A party, one half celebration, one half slaughter, rages through the city as it seeks catharsis on the invaders after the long weeks of siege. I imagine the wine will flow alongside the blood for many days yet. Something wrong, Legate? I ask. You should be the one to take the slave king. The soldiers flood into the mound. We have had our glory today, Praetorian. Let us not drown ourselves in gluttony. The legions know who opened the gates, I say, loud enough for the other Praetorians to hear. They tip their cups of wine and pass burners through the ranks. 1,000 grey shock troopers came to me in the desert. Barely 300 remain. Not one is unwounded. There is a sudden flurry of firing in the mound. I had no doubt Darrow would make a last stand, but with the introduction of advanced weapons to the battle, it is a certain affair. One knight kitted by our age is worth 1,000 on horse, perhaps more. I run my hands along the hilt of his broken blade and feel confused by what it elicits. He threw me down in the desert. I broke him here. But neither was a true test against the other. The fate of each battle was decided before we met. Mine by the broken chaos of the rain, his by a series of calamities which put him in a corner. I did not beat the Reaper. I simply hit him when he was down. I hold no illusions of martial supremacy. My victory was against a broken host and a bedraggled man. The legends of our age die one by one, like autumn leaves. And when they are gone, will we be lesser for their absence? It seems cheap. With his death imminent, the worlds feel emptier, almost as cavernous as they did when Cassius fell. One by one, the titans of my youth disappear, and freed from their shadow, I do not feel liberated. I feel bereft. Nothing is permanent. No one escapes. The bill comes at the end, I whisper. Roan asks what I said, but I grow distracted when gunfire crackles on the mound. Something has happened. I frown and stand up. The milling ranks in the courtyard point upward as rip wings dive from the sky. Wow! We take cover. The light is tremendous as a particle beam sheaves through the legs of the god Helios, who towers over the mound. With a groan, he teeters over and crashes down into the sea. By Jove! How does Darrow have electronics? Anything within the city was fried. Unless we weren't the only ones to have reinforcements. Sure enough, gold knights tear from the mound in pursuit of a lean, battered ship that emerges from the debris. It rockets low over the ranks of soldiers filling the courtyard. I know that ship. A knight fills the open garage bay. It is not Darrow. His armor is brilliant white, his helmet like that of a rising sun. It retracts to reveal his face, and for a moment our eyes meet. Cassius! The door closes. The Archimedes ripples translucent from a cloaking device far more advanced than any technology she possessed when I called her home. She ruptures the air with a sonic boom and races toward the sky, pursued by the Ash Legions. Diomedes lied. Cassius is alive. And Darrow has slipped the noose. My true heart is laid bare, awash with exultation, clouded with confusion, pure with purpose. The war goes on.
Chapter 88. Lyria. Mercury has fallen. Ulysses is buried on Mars in a rose garden between Victor's ancestral home and the sea. Across the water, the Julii city of Hippolyte splashes out into the emerald archipelagos. Victor stands just across the grave from me, but looks as distant as her city. She wears only green. I like it far better than mourning black. It reminds me of the emerald hills they say wait for us in the Vale. I wish I could take away her pain, but all I can do is stand here and watch her suffer behind that stony face. I know the teeth of this pain wound not with their sharp bite, but with their slow grinding. Her fearsome daughter bends over the grave, whispers something to her brother, and then stands protectively at her mother's side. She knows best. There are no words to soothe the wounded heart of a Julii. Only 5 attend the funeral. The 2 Julii, the Reaper's son, Volga and me. Our retinue feels pitifully small next to the void his loss has carved, and still, I cannot help but feel I do not belong. After Ephraim came, Victra and I went to the fishing village to retrieve her son's body from Maeve's house. Victra washed him herself in Attica, but refused to bury him there. "He'll sleep at home," was all she said to me before boarding her ship. "And now you sleep," Victra whispers to the grave, and then turns away to walk to the coast. Pax moves to follow. Electra grabs him, and he stops to watch Victra's shoulders shake as she wades into the water and swims out to the sea toward the setting sun. When she is almost out of sight, Electra jerks her head for us to follow her down to the coast. We help her make a fire from a pile of driftwood. Everything inside feels very still as Volga and I sit beside the children in the sand. As soon as the sun is gone, Electra speaks. "I am equal parts of my father and mother, but we Julii have a tradition. If family blood spills by your debt, you swim to the sun. You may look back when it is gone. If no light appears on shore to welcome you home, you swim on." She's quiet for a moment. "Some never turn to look back." Though Volga weeps soundlessly beside me for Ulysses, in a way she buries two today. She still has not forgiven Pax for asking Ephraim to go back to Sephi. She waited at the landing pads for 12 hours before somehow duping the Julii guards and stealing a ship. I tried to follow, but Victra herself intervened. Julii military and aid ships were the first to descend on Olympia 3 days later, when Far and the Obsidians left it in a heap of rubble and corpses. Even my camp's destruction couldn't prepare me for Olympia. I've never seen so many crows or wild dogs before in all my life. I thought the stench was more than I could bear. But then we found Volga sitting on the steps of the high city, cradling Ephraim. She tried holding him together, but his body fell apart when she stood up. I will never forget the look on her face. It has chiseled away the stone of my heart, leaving a wound of empathy I haven't the ken to mend. There were no witnesses to tell us what happened to that doomed city, save a mad obsidian with both his eyes gouged out. We found him at the base of a throne, swatting at the crows that came too close to a body covered with a cape. Pax and Electra knew the mad obsidian and the body he protected. He somehow fled the Soul Guard, who were to take him back to a medical shuttle, and disappeared into the dead city, never to be found. Pax couldn't say who killed Ephraim, but we know who killed Sephi and sacked the city. The same monster who attacked the Pandora. Volsung Far. The name is like a curse to us. A curse that deepens the more Pax explains just what his control of the Obsidians might mean for Mars. What city will they sack next? Could the Republic survive the man who took down Julii, Sephi, Valdir and the Valkyrie in just 2 weeks? I fear Volga's name will soon be added to that list. She wants revenge for Ephraim. It will bring her nothing but more heartache. Though my vengeance on Harmony is sated, I feel no more whole. What peace will I find if even that cannot mend me? I did not like Ephraim, but he was like a father to Volga. I saw how she looked at Victra, the slow smiles when Victra would fire a particularly clever insult her way, her eyes focus on the dark water as she prays under her breath to the All-Mother for Victra to return. She loves far too easily. But her prayers are answered. 6 hours after Victra sets out, she returns. Her dress was lost in the sea. Her legs fail her as she stumbles up the beach like a scarred ghost and sits amongst us by the fire. She ignores Pax's offer of his cloak and sits naked until finally taking Electra's riding cape. When her teeth stop their chattering, she looks around at us. One bill is paid. Debts are due. She looks at Electra and Pax. I swore a life oath to both of you the first time I saw you. I renew that oath here and now. Her eyes flick to me and Volga. To you two, I swear it for the first time. Let your enemies be my enemies. Let your errors be my errors. Let your life be my life. I do not tell lies. If ever you call, House Barker will answer. Me too, for you, Volga says. I agree, I say. Pax leans forward. Technically, you're to say, you are never in my debt, and she will say, Electra hits him in the side of the head. He shuts his gob. What will you do now? I ask Victra. Go to your daughters? She still hasn't said where they are. No. I will go to war, she replies. The Pandora may be taken, but the rest of my fleet is intact. Luna has my husband, Mercury my friend, and then I will vanquish the woman who sought my family's demise. Atalantia, Electra murmurs in solidarity. My brothers are on Mercury, I say. You require a ride? Victra asks. No, I'm going to Earth with Volga. Volga looks over in surprise. It hasn't been discussed, but I know where she wants to bury him. Ephraim wouldn't want you getting killed going after them that did him. Say his name, she says. You don't know who did it. Say his name. Far, Electra answers for me. Ephraim wouldn't want you dying on his accord, I say. You know that. I'm going to go find my nephew, and you're going to bury Ephraim in South Pacifica, like you said he'd want. She does not reply. Victra, I'll need a ship. Can you fly? Victra asks skeptically. I look at Volga. I hope so. In the morning, Volga and I load the coffin containing Ephraim's remains onto a Julii racing ship that Victra has given us for the journey. Victra watches Volga secure the coffin inside. It isn't proper, Victra says, keeping her from her revenge when you have had your own. Haven't you seen enough of that? I ask. Not while Atalantia breathes, not while Far breathes. They cost me my son. You want to lose the rest of your children? Her eyes swivel down to me, and in a second I'm reminded of who she is and who I am. Careful, Blister. This woman owns cities and fleets, but I let her alone out of respect for her loss, more than fear of all her legions and ships' might. When it came down to it, she was just a mother on her own. A soul guard rushes up to Victra and whispers something I can't hear. She frowns. Let them in. All of them. It's the Reaper's gory damn brother. What do you think? 5 minutes later, 10 Republic shuttles crowd the landing pad, and the Arch-Governor of Mars walks out. Not Rolo. Somehow, in all this mess, the Vox put him down in a firefight in the Citadel. Instead, it is now Kieran O'Lykos. You wouldn't even think he was the same species as his brother. He's barely bigger than I am. And his is the kind of face meant for laughter and laurel-tide dances. But he ain't laughing as he strides toward Victra with 200 Sons of Ares at his back. He looks like he's going to puke. The Soul Guard nod in respect to their allies. I haven't seen that spiked helmet painted on armour in years. It really does chill the blood. The Arch-Governor greets Victra with a hug and casts a look at Volga before swooping Pax and Electra up as much as he can, them being as big as he is. He garlands them with kisses and then turns back to Victra with a somber look. "Is there some place we could speak in private?" he asks. She motions him to the shoreline. The two groups of soldiers chat across the lines as Victra and the Arch-Governor walk along the water. Pax watches intently. "What are they saying?" Volga asks. "My hearing isn't that good," he replies. "Nor your judgment," she says, point blank. Pax looks up at her and is about to say something when she turns her back on him. "Only 11 years old and already sending men to their deaths. If Volga thought it didn't weigh him down, she'd be dead wrong. He is in agony. Ephraim must have gotten under his skin. He was good at that, wasn't he?" There's a shout from Victra at something the Arch-Governor says. She wheels away from him and stalks back to us. "Volga, get in the ship," she says. Her guards look as confused as Volga. The Arch-Governor catches up. "It is this or another Olympia," he calls. "Since when do we kneel to monsters?" Victra snaps, stalking back toward the tiny man. "Since when do we abandon our own?" She jams a thumb against her chest. "I am Victra Albarca. I do not sacrifice my friends." The Reaper's brother does not back down. "Heliopolis has fallen." My heart sinks. My brothers. But he's not done. The Free Legions were slaughtered to a man. More than 2 million were impaled. My brother is dead. His brother? It's like watching wind move meadow grass. Grown men's knees buckle across the landing pad. The sons of Ares did not know. The Soul Guard did not know. Victra did not know. He hadn't told her yet. She looks as if she is dying as she glances at Pax. The boy watches with a tremble in his hands. Whatever anger Victra had when she stormed away from the Arch-Governor crumples. I feel something break inside myself. I don't know what it is. I long ago gave my brothers up for dead. It's for the Reaper, this emptiness. I guess I held some weird belief he couldn't die. Some thought that as long as he lived, the society could never come back. But now it all seems possible. The Reaper is dead. And they have killed something in all of us. "By noon, all of Mars will know," the Arch-Governor says. "Victra, my brother is dead. I know Virginia told you she sent a man. He's been dark since he got to Mercury. Whatever happened, there were no survivors, and the heir of Silenius has returned." Victra stiffens. "Atalantia will sail on Luna. If the Vox don't see reason, Earth won't be able to hold. It will just be Mars that's left. We can't afford to fight the Obsidians with what's coming. You know that." Something goes unspoken between them. Something they can't let us know. "Old debts are coming due." Victra turns to look at Volga. "I swore an oath to her." Volga looks around in confusion. "What are you looking at her for?" I snap. "What's going on, Victra?" "You tell her, if you can stomach it," Victra says to the Arch-Governor. The man looks tired, but his voice is almost soothing. "After Volsung Fa left Olympia with more than half its citizens in chains, he sent a deputation to us. He claims to be the father of Ragnar Valaris." Pax flinches. The Arch-Governor looks Volga sadly in the eye. "And he pledged no further acts of violence toward the Republic and offered to give us the survivors of his massacre and depart Mars." "Depart Mars? For what price?" I demand. "His granddaughter," Victra says. Volga does not move a muscle. I look back and forth between them. "Slag off." Volga's mouth moves up and down. "But... you were born in a Grimace slave kennel," Victra says. You are the product of a dead Terran gladiator named Hrothgar, and a man I fought beside. You are the daughter of Ragnar Valaris, and if this Far is telling the truth, you are his only living heir, just as you were Sephi's. What? Electra whispers. Pax closes his eyes in thought. They open just as Volga whispers. No. She looks at the shocked soldiers first, as if they will save her or something, and then to her own hands. I am a freelancer. She looks up. That Ephraim? No, Pax says. He didn't know. I think he's lying. I step in front of her, wishing I had a pistol. Get on the shuttle, Volga. She doesn't move. She looks at Victra for guidance. Get on the shuttle. They won't fire through me, Victra says. You're a freelancer, Volga, the Arch-Governor calls. So let me put a price on it. If you go to Far, he leaves this planet and you save millions of lives. We may beat him if you refuse, but when gold comes after that, Mars will fall in a day. Volga, my brother is gone. We need heroes. That does it. Volga straightens to her full height. I try to push her toward the shuttle, but she settles me with one hand. Lyria, she says. Lyria, promise me you will take Ephraim to South Pacifica and that you will find your family. Don't do this. I am not a slave. It is my choice. You can't. You don't. Ephraim would, she says. He did not raise me to be a bad woman, but he did not raise me to be good either. Far will bring me close, and he will pay for his evil. She smiles down at me. Thank you for helping me. I have never had a friend so small be so big. She kisses me on the forehead and steps forward. I watch from a tower on Victra's estate as the obsidian ships disappear into the evening sky. They are said to be bound for the asteroid belt, but who can be certain? Pax joins me from below. I'm too disgusted with his republic to look at him. Mars rose up for us against the Red Hand. Gamma rose up. At just the moment when I was beginning to believe in people, they sent Volga to hell. I remember the first time we met, Pax says after a while. I was presumptuous and wounded you. I would like to ask your forgiveness, because I've done it again. He waits for me to turn. I don't. What did you do? Victra came to me and asked some rather peculiar questions, innocently, of course. What she asked, however, led me to believe you may have a parasite. So I hacked and read the doctor's reports on your physical. Your father just died, and you're going through my physical. What? Never seen a pair of tits before? He goes quiet. I recently learned my mother has come back to life. I glance at him. The Sovereign's alive. He nods. She's coming here, and has ordered the Republic to summon its strength to Mars. So I believe I should be very industrious until she arrives, especially in matters as curious as this. If you read the report, you know. I knock on my head. Poor thing, went and broke on me. Done's done. Her people can't figure anything, and I don't know how to extract it without killing me. Still got the orb, though, and that's mine. Why would you want it extracted when all it wants is to be repaired? He asks. Isn't it giving you instructions? I don't answer. Even now I feel the urges of the parasite. They heightened near the city. Maybe it's the communication towers. I feel an emotional ache to return home to some place I've never been. But I know that's not me talking, because I don't have a home, and the feeling seems to be coming from a great distance. Then Pax says something I didn't include on the report. Oh, my mountain hyacinth, what shepherds trod upon you with clumsy rustic foot, Now you are a broken seal, a scarlet stain upon the earth. Figmentum es. I blink at him. How did you... So I was right. He smiles to himself. I read everything and cross-reference latently, including files only 10 people have access to. My mother wanted me to be prepared, and I think I know how to help you. Her spymaster had relevant information. Wouldn't you like to be someone who could make a difference, Lyria of Lagalos? He looks up after the obsidian fleet. Did Victra send you? No. She wants to protect you from what you could be, but she only knows that Figment inherited the parasite and gained advantages from it. She has no idea what it really is or where it comes from. And you do? I have my suspicions. I don't take the bait. My brothers were in Heliopolis. Liam's the only family I have left. Family is more than just blood. I look up after the ships. I helped those girls save themselves. I helped Victra. I helped Volga. The little man is right. I do want to make a difference. What if I told you that I could find Liam easier than you could without leaving a computer? Would you do something for me? I squint at him. Be more specific. He pulls out a thin hollow map of the inner asteroid belt and hands it to me. Have you ever heard of a city called Oculus?
Chapter 89. Lysander. Triumph of the Long Night. I stand looking out at Heliopolis from the Lady Beatrice. Cassius is alive. I do not know how or why, but somehow he survived the Rim's perversion of justice. Diomedes must have had a hand in it. Was it for honour that he was spared, or some nefarious purpose I cannot yet divine? I would ask the man, but he departed Mercury to prepare the Rim's entrance into the war long before Heliopolis's liberation. Pytha told me he searched the Ladan for 10 days for his sister before departing with a heavy heart. There is a war inside me. I would have given nearly anything to bring Cassius back from death. Anything except this. He died for the Rising. Now he fights with them. He is my enemy. I cannot come to terms with it. I believe I am the only one who knows Cassius's hand in the fiasco at the mound. If Atalantia found out, the ramifications for me, for the Rim, would be calamitous. Whatever pact Cassius made with the Rising earned the Archimedes a boon. Her new engines were faster than any the core ships possessed. Her hull cloaked even more thoroughly than Atalantia's hunting corvettes. I sense Quicksilver's hand at work. Because of my old friend Darrow, Harnassus, Telemannus, and the core of the Howlers managed to either hide on Mercury or slip out of its orbit. Their army was not so fortunate. Those who survived the Long Night, as they now call it, languish in camps south of the spaceport, pressed into labor to rebuild the planet they helped break. After seeing the ruins of Tyche and northern Helios, I know it will be no short affair. Today is the first day since recapturing Heliopolis that the city does not rattle with sounds of construction. The cranes are quiet in the city sky today, but the streets bubble with noise. Rooftops along the Via Triumphia writhe with color and jubilation. Mercury has turned out for my triumph. Are you there? I ask the air. Apollonius? No one replies. Whomever are you talking to? Glerastes crows from the doorway. Just phantoms. Did he ever really exist in the desert? Did he follow me, or was it the imaginings of a sun-leached brain? You look as if you were bound for your own funeral, Glerastes says. My old friend sways up behind me to look out at the city. It may yet be. Oh, please. Do you have it? He hands me the duck's pendant I made for Roan. I am told there are crescents painted upon every street corner from the Hippodrome to the spaceport. You go too far. Glirastes shrugs. Today he wears silver and white, the colours of my house. On his neck is a gold chain with a great pendant of an eye with a ruby iris. The eye of the society, the greatest award any civilian can receive. Octavia gave it to him long ago at the unveiling of the water colossus of Tyche. Though Atalantia has not executed him as a traitor yet, neither has she gifted him with a pardon.
You're projecting frustration, dear boy. Desist. I am the artist. If it is to be a diva duel, I'll match you cry for cry, and then piss on your pillow and blame it on my dead ocelot. And you'll wonder if I'm insane, and I'll cackle because, yes, yes, I am, and I can get away with anything.
Atalantia still may kill you, I say. Don't forget.
If I were a betting man, which you are, then I would wager all on the proposition that my head is more secure than yours, young loon. After all, I am the best kind of hero, harmless, and you are the worst, young with a name.
I sigh and lean on the railing with him. I suppose I did ask for theatrics.
Yes, dear boy, and right now they're the only thing keeping you alive.
That and the furore for the air returned that sweeps through Mercury and the legions. I really don't mind it much at all, but I fear grandmother's wisdom. Will Atalantia break me if she thinks I eclipse her in the mirror? Ajax already tried. With my polite imprisonment in the Lady Beatrice, and Atalantia spurning my requests for an audience, I fear he is pouring poison in his aunt's ear. She will think I did this for my own glory to supplant her. Did I? Glirastes searches my face.
Kalindora was asking for you.
I know.
She said it was important.
I say nothing. Kalindora's wounds were mended by the Medici, but not the poison darrow's blade slipped into her bloodstream. She is dying, and I do not think I could do what I must were I to look at her in the eye before the triumph.
Do you love her? Glirastes asks.
I look at him. I left her on the ground to chase Darrow. What a hideous thing to do. I never had the chance, but I believe I would.
Then I will find a cure.
You're not a medicus?
No, but I am a genius.
Heavy boots clump the tile. Roan stands in the entry. I am appalled by his armour. It is as black as the space between stars. Purple bands cover the joints, and on the chest plate is a silver crescent moon inside the pyramid of the society.
Dominus, the shuttle has arrived.
Where did you get that uniform? I ask. Roan looks suddenly embarrassed.
Their old gear is on Venus, Glirastes explains. I had new uniforms made in Naran and shipped here for the occasion.
You have to stop. The provocation
exists regardless of the accoutrement. I know, I know. You are not the sovereign, nor do you campaign to be, but you are the last blood of Selenius. If Atalantia wants to kill you, she must kill your destiny before the eyes of the worlds.
Atlas Aura waits at the grimace shuttle, eyeing the ceremonial dress of my guards. It is a product of chance that he survived the long night. When the power died, his cell went into lockdown. I hear the queue to kill him was 1,000 men deep. How he must have smiled at them as they beat at the doors. Roan says it took the man's Gorgons 4 hours to drill into the cell to free him. He looks peculiar, groomed, and without his desert gear. His fear knight ceremonial armour is bone-white and perversely etched with screaming children. Unlike most, he does not hide his true vocation behind gilded heraldic symbols. Yet there's an anxiousness to him here in civilization which I did not see in the desert, a sort of alienation from the very thing he sought to protect. "Aren't you minorly overqualified for an escort?" I ask. He eyes the Praetorians. "Aren't they minorly overdressed?" "For a funeral?" I ask. "Kalindora has several days yet," he says without pleasure. It says something about Kalindora that even a man like Atlas would look at his toes considering her death. "I know the poison. It is favoured by the Skugi, slow but thorough." "We both know I wasn't speaking of Kalindora." He eyes me with amusement.
"Well, Loon, I suppose that depends entirely upon you."
Our shuttle arrives at the staging area outside the storm wall of Heliopolis. The triumphal arch that was commissioned in haste by Glerastes stands before the open gates. It is the most heterogeneous gathering of any triumph I can remember. Glerastes' servants mill together, gawping at the spectacle as they share cups of wine and receive instructions from the copper planners. Hundreds of the loyalists who answered my call and risked their lives to save their city are here. Most are mid-colour, though many lower amongst them. I could not have designed a better message to the people gathered here. You saved your city. You walk with me. Behind them, sprawling out into the desert, are the hundreds of thousands of soldiers captured in Ajax's failed assault on Heliopolis. Their line snakes 4 kilometres long. Gold, grey, obsidian and blue drink down spirits passed out by reds and browns. Together they sing the ancient hymn battle cry of the Lightbringer. If only Aja could see this. If only my parents could. A buzz goes through the assembly as I walk to my place at the honoured fore with Glerastes and Rome. The drunkest of the loyalists shout my name or begin to applaud. A copper Arctarius bustles over to me with a huge data pad and a gaggle of assistants. She greets me with alacrity and guides me to my chariot. "It is made of the finest Mercurian onyx, Dominus. A gift from the dictator herself. It is incredibly light compared to most triumphal chariots, and with 4 of the dictator's Bucephalon geldings to pull, your charioteer will be..." I raise a hand. She stops mid-sentence.
"Of course she favours geldings," Rome whispers.
I hide a smile.
"You expect a self-respecting loony's gold to ride in onyx, like a Venusian sprite?"
Glerastes replies.
"Our Loon has brought his own chariot."
Several Praetorians wheel it forward from one of Glerastes' shuttles.
"But the colour coordination,"
the Arctarius squeals before my Praetorians guide her away. Roan stays to oversee the Sunblood's transfer to the white chariot Glerastes had made specially for the event. Pytha watches me from amidst Glerastes' servants. They lower their heads as I approach. My friend held me in her arms for 3 whole minutes when Atalantia's men delivered her to the estate. She tilts down her eyeshades at me. "My liege," she says with a bow. Since I told her Cassius was alive, she has been distant, spending most of her time in Glerastes' gardens.
"I've decided I'll be sticking around."
I'm stunned. It is not what I expected. "May I ask why?"
"You need me more than the old boy does."
Her eyes dart about at the sycophants watching us.
"Be ashamed to see you survive the desert, only to die in your sleep."
She jerks her head.
"Now get. The worlds await you, my liege."
I return to the chariot to see the horses ready to go. Roan pats Blood of Empire on the neck and begs a word before I mount. His eyes focus on my chest.
"I merely wanted to say, formally, we failed your family more than once. I never thought I would see the Praetorian Guard reclaim its honour, my liege. I never thought I could reclaim my own. But you gave us the opportunity."
His eyes find mine.
"We will not fail you."
There's equal parts pride and humility in this man. I wish he knew for a single moment how high the legions hold him in esteem. But if he were capable of knowing, he would not be Roan T. Flavinius. I worry for him. for what awaits at the end of this triumph. I have seen how easily lives are spent. I do not wish to spend him or the 300 who survived the Ladan. I put a hand on his shoulder. I believe for some reason that our fates are entwined, Flavinius. I will need you today, tomorrow, and all the days after. Within my household, I grant you the title of Dux. He blinks at me.
Dux, my liege?
Are you fit for the task? A Dux is an appointed right hand with unlimited imperium within a house. His word is my word. It is usually, but not always, reserved for golds like Aja, who was my grandmother's Dux. It will honour him as he should be honoured, and at the same time show the greys of the legions how I reward loyalty. I have the sneaking suspicion that as go the greys, so go the legions. After all, they do outnumber my race 1,000 to 1. As Glerastes would say, never pass up the opportunity to shore up your foundation. I pull the warrant of Dux from my pocket. He lifts his head, and I seal the metal to his forehead. The skin burns as the hawk and crescent moon meld with his flesh and bone. He salutes with tears in his eyes and mounts his horse to follow my chariot. I join Atlas on the chariot. He rides as my dagger shadow, a place of honour and trust. Two things he has not earned in my eyes, but Kalindora is too sick to stand where she ought.
He's a good man, Flavinius, he drawls. Be ashamed to waste